Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hey guys, welcome to this, I'm going to call it a Toyota fanboy episode of Talking Cars, because we're going to be talking about two things, actually three things, Tom. We're going to be talking about off-roading, we're going to be talking about the 4Runner, and more importantly, we're going to be talking about the FJ Cruiser.
We just bought an FJ Cruiser. It's a 2014, and it was very expensive.
And an FJ Cruiser is one of those iconic cars that feels like it should have been made by some other company and not Toyota, if you know what I mean.
What do you mean by that?
It's just so wacky for a company like Toyota that's so buttoned down to come up with something that's so heavily style-driven.
Yeah, and in this podcast, we'll talk about all the really cool things that make the FJ Cruiser so special, and we'll talk about why we bought the FJ Cruiser, why maybe you out there should buy the FJ Cruiser, and perhaps why you should probably buy a 4Runner.
All right, and that is coming up right after the intro.
Sit back and relax, or keep driving if you're driving. TFL Talking Cars is on the air, the world's most popular car podcast. Okay, maybe not yet, but we're working on it.
All right, we're back. So, Tommy, we normally buy either classic, cool old cars, or cool new cars, but the FJ is kind of neither one of those, right? Because, well, it was built from 2007, at least sold from 2007 to 2014 here in the United States. It's actually still sold in many places around the world. So places like South Africa.
Yeah, and the Middle East. You can go out and buy a brand new FJ Cruiser. But, like you mentioned, in the U.S., it was only around for 7 model years. And it was an interesting 7 model years because when it debuted, 2006, 2007, right, around that era, we were heading into the financial crisis.
Yeah, and like I said, it's an odd bird for Toyota because it's so heavily driven by its style, right? I mean, in some of the other podcasts we've done, we've said that there are no such thing as boring cars with clamshell doors, right? Think about the ones that have clamshell doors, the Honda Element, the BMW i3.
And Mazda RX-8.
RX-8, and of course, now the FJ Cruiser. And it's true, right? The vehicle was specifically designed to be a dedicated off-roader with all of that design going into that function. So, Toyota is the world's largest automaker. They usually build cars for the mass audience. And this car was designed for the enthusiast.
So I have kind of a different perspective. I think a lot of the FJ Cruiser design is not for its off-road capability, because there's a lot of really silly design elements that probably hamper it off-road.
Like three wipers?
No, like the fact that you can't see out the back or really out the front or out the side.
It was actually designed in California by Calte.
Yeah, so the concept came out in 2003, and it's styled after the original FJ, the FJ40, which, grew in popularity in the United States throughout the 1960s and 70s. It was a competitor to the CJ. the Jeep, and that's where a lot of the design comes from. So in the front, you've got the round lights with the Toyota grille. You know, you've got the white roof, which is straight out of the FJ40L. A lot of similarities, but this is kind of more of a throwback vehicle. So the FJ40 was definitely, you know, all about function, all about durability and simplicity, where the FJ Cruiser had a lot of more elements in it that were cool, but didn't necessarily help it in terms of longevity or off-road capability.
Yeah, let's talk about it kind of first in mechanical terms and then in sales numbers so that we kind of set a baseline. So it does share the basic chassis and running drivetrain from the Toyota 4Runner.
Yeah, so it's based on the old Toyota 4Runner. Slightly shorter, though. So yep. It's got a shorter wheelbase than the 4Runner, but the 4-liter V6 is the same. The transmissions were pretty much the same.
Automatic.
Yeah, you know, frame,
or manual.
Frame design was pretty much the same.
And that was, I think, based actually on the Prado in some ways. Right, so it goes back to like the European vehicle, if I recall right. And like I said, it was sold from 2007 to 2014, and they sold about 220,000 of them over that 7-year stretch, with most of them being sold in 2007 and 2008. And I think about 120,000 of those were sold in those 2 years. And then the following years, they sold between 13 and 14,000 every year. And the reason, of course, is whenever a new car is introduced, there's the most excitement around it, the most interest. And so the first year of production or the second year is always when you sell the most of them. So if you're out there looking for one in the used market, those will be the ones you'll run into the most. And then they did do some changes. In 2009, for the 2010 model of the year, they made the diff a little bit more aggressive, a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. But for the most part, it remained fairly unchanged for those 7 years that it was sold.
They did improve like the infotainment system a little bit.
Yeah, the radio got a little bit better.
And then I think the big thing they changed is 07 and 08 seemed to have a lot of rust issues. So the frame of those 2 years especially, if you look under them, especially in the used market, if they've come out of a salty location, they tend to be a little bit more crusty, we'll say, than the later ones. And this was an issue not only to the FJ Cruiser, but you remember like Tacoma had that huge frame recall?
Yeah, they had actually – we had a friend who actually had a Tacoma where they changed out the entire frame under warranty, and that is a big job.
That is a big job for sure.
That's a big job, yeah. One of the cool things, I guess – about the FJ is it's probably outside of the Wrangler the least appreciating car. We bought a 2014 with 57,000 miles on it, and it cost us $33,500, which is almost as much as it costs new, actually.
Which is just shocking.
Yeah, which is just shocking. And I think the reason for that is, well, because Toyota has this reputation for reliability, and the car has become, dare I say it, Tommy, a modern collectible.
It certainly has a cult following. So there's people that like the FJ, and there's people that love the FJ, and there's a lot of people that can only drive FJs, it seems like. So there's a lot of, you know, just hardcore fans, similar to the Jeep world, except in the Jeep world you have 30-some years of Wrangler, right? In the FJ world, you had 7 years of FJ. So that really limits, realistically, the number of modern-era FJ Cruisers that you can buy. I mean, it's great. The idea is great of buying an old FJ40, but the reality is they're really small and cramped, and I just didn't fit in one when I drove it, and they don't really have air conditioning for the most part unless you retrofit them, and they're pretty slow. So the FJ Cruiser had a lot of the cool design elements of the original, but brought it into the modern era. Now, the 03 concept is pretty much exactly what went into production in 07. There were some cool design elements they left out. So, for example, the transmission shifter on the concept was like a shovel.
Yeah.
You know, it had this cool shovel handle design.
Yeah.
They had these interior lights that you could remove and use as flashlights. Some of those components didn't make it into the final version, but there were some weird things that did. Stuff like the body-colored interior panel. So you've got these like panels on the dashboard and across the doors that match the outside. You've got those weird little marker lights in the mirrors. Those made it into production that you just won't typically see in other Toyotas.
Yeah, and the color that it came out in was Voodoo Blue. It's a very bright blue.
Which I didn't know. So Voodoo Blue is, like, in my mind, the TRD Pro color,
right,
from, like, the Tacoma and 4Runners, right? But it turns out that was actually an FJ color, too, 10 years to 13 years ago.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it's a really bright color. And, you know, what makes that car so cool is it's, you know, it's, like I said, it's designed and purpose-built to be an off-roader. So you've got these two little, like, I'm going to call them jaunty fenders that jut out in front of the wheels, right? And those can be replaced if they get hit. You've got the inclinometer on the inside. You've got this little binnacle with, like, three cool, there's a compass, there's a thermometer and clock for outside temperature, and then there's an inclinometer, right? Then, of course, you've got the clamshell doors, which are, you know, really unique. And then you have all the things that you need to go off-road, right? You have a really good approach angle, departure angle, breakover angle, because the wheelbase is relatively short. And you can get, depending on, you know, what model you purchase, you can get A-Track. Later years, you can get the A-Track with the little knob where you could control the speed, and that's basically an off-road crawl control system. And best of all, you can get a locking rear diff. So you have a center locker and a rear locker, A-Track. It makes it pretty unstoppable off-road. But beware. When we were looking for one, I was looking for one in L.A. because, you know, you don't want a car that comes out of someplace that is not salty, like you said. And I found a whole bunch of FJs that were really cheap. Do you know why?
Yeah, they're two-wheel drive. You know, I would argue, though.
You could have gotten into it.
I would make the argument that the FJ Cruiser is no more purpose-built off-road than a 4Runner.
Okay.
Because if you can buy a two...
How about purpose-designed off-road?
No, I think it was just a much cooler-looking 4Runner. It's like if you wanted a 4Runner, you wanted to go off-road, but you also wanted a lot more design. Because there's the fact that they made a two-wheel drive version tells me that they weren't all intended to go drive
that's
off-road.
That's a California and Texas people.
But they sold them here. I mean, you could buy the just like on the 4Runner, you can buy a two-wheel drive 4Runner.
I'm betting a lot of dealers didn't order two-wheel drive FJs.
So my point is, though... you know, it's a really cool vehicle, but for a lot of people, it's pretty heavily compromised. So, like, the clamshell doors...
Yeah, if you're buying it as a family car, you're going to hate the backseat.
Yeah, the clamshell doors aren't great, and the backseat is really small.
And the visibility is, because of that, it's almost got the Hummer-like short, you know, short roof line, right, height, and so you kind of don't see out of it very well.
No, it's very hard to see, especially rocks coming up. So I think there's a lot of, like, deterrence to its design. But, I mean, I don't think it's any less off-road worthy than a 4Runner.
And we did take it off-road for the first time seriously yesterday, and we'll get to that. So we'll talk about, you know, how it does off-road.
Now let's talk about the 4Runner, right? You can still buy the 4Runner.
Yeah. More practical. That's a much more Toyota-ish car.
Now we're up, I think, to the fifth-gen 4Runner.
And it's still basically the same powertrain.
Yep, 4-liter V6. Only the 5-speed automatic in the U.S.
Yeah, 4Runner. The FJ was available in a manual.
The 6-speed manual. But the 4Runner is very similar. You know, solid rear axle, independent front suspension, body on frame. It had skid plates underneath, A-Track, crawl control, you know, are available on the 4Runner. So very similar in terms of off-road capabilities. A little bit longer, which means the breakover isn't as good.
So it's like they're siblings, but the FJ is kind of the more artsy, more...
Yes, I think that's a great way of looking at it.
More kind of out there version of the same vehicle.
And we met with a lovely guy named James.
He runs the Facebook FJ page.
Yeah, in Colorado. He's a real expert on these things. And he told us the progression typically goes, you buy an FJ Cruiser, and then you always end up in a 4Runner. So you have the FJ Cruiser, you have fun, you wheel it off-road, you build it up, and then it turns out you get the wife and the kids, and then you need room, and then you end up with the 4Runner. So that seems to be the progression for FJ people.
Now let's talk about kind of the options that were available. So ours, when we bought it in 2014, there were three packages. And basically, we didn't get the off-road package, but it had a lot of the off-road goodies, right? So it had the locking rear diff. It had the A-Track.
Yep.
It didn't have the I guess it was like a locking diff that would work with the transmission to lock and unlock as it electronically controlled, right? Ours just locks and stays locked. So once it's locked, it stays
locked. I haven't
heard
about that.
Yeah, I was looking at the options list for 2014.
There was also rock rails were an option.
Which we don't have.
So rock rails are an option. JBL sound was an option.
We have the big subwoofer in the back.
Yep.
And then, of course, we didn't get the roof rack, but we went and bought one.
Right, you really wanted the roof rack.
Yeah, I just think it's part of the whole thing.
So
it feels naked without it.
The kind of the pinnacle of them was the Trails Team Edition.
Yeah, if you're in the off-road Toyota world, you'll know it because it's basically the TRD version of the 4Runner, the Trail Team's version of the FJ. It's just a different branding.
Yes.
You could get TRD exhaust on the FJ.
Yeah, the TRD exhaust. Trails Team was More or less like a color and sticker package?
It was an appearance package. Every year they picked one color that they featured. Like ours is cement, and then they would color toward the end. They would color match not just the little molding, right, but also the seats.
Yeah, the seats were color matched. I think they, it's depending on the year, but I'm pretty sure almost all, if not all of them, had paint-matched roofs.
Yeah.
So, like, ours has a white roof, but I think the Trails team had the body-colored roofs.
Which is weird, because a paint-matched, according to James, roof is actually much easier to make than when you have to basically spray-paint the roof white and you have to put two colors in the body.
I don't think they're spray painting it. I don't see like a guy out there like with a rattle can.
No. You know? I mean, it's robotically spray painted.
Right.
There's machines.
They paint it up, yeah. I think the Trails team also had special wheels. I think it had different wheels over ours.
But it didn't have any more off-road capability.
But in 2014, they only made somewhere around 2,500 of them. And people really, really love them.
There's a final edition in 2014. And there's also even a more final edition that came out in 2017 in Japan. That's also crazy. But the one here in the U.S. is the most valuable. Those are running like 45,000 right now.
Yeah, which is crazy because I think new they were probably 40 or 42,000.
Like a 2007 FJ. And we pay like a $2,000 premium here in Colorado for them. So if you're someplace else, you know, or if you're in Colorado and you want one, look someplace else and then bring it back here. But, you know, a high mileage one, and I consider anything over 200K to be high mileage, 2007, 2008, those are like anywhere from like, let's say, on the lower end, maybe 10,000 to on the high end, 15.
Okay.
And then, of course, the later the model, the less miles, the more expensive it gets. And if you get the Trails team, just add another premium, like 5K on top of that.
Right, which is just absurd to me. But that's what people want. I mean, people love the last ones, and especially 2010 and newer are the ones that are the most desirable. So people pay typically well over $20,000-$25,000.
Now, just like Jeeps, there's a lot of available mods for them. The one difference between, of course, an FJ and a Wrangler is that the FJ has independent front suspension, whereas a Wrangler has a solid axle. Solid axle in the back of both vehicles, and so they're a little bit harder to lift.
It makes it a little bit more tricky, but it's still super doable.
But obviously the first thing people did with them was lift them.
Yeah, you see lift kits, bumpers were big, so you see a lot of winch bumpers on them. Roof racks up top, very popular. You can, you know, armor the underside of them. Various rock rails are options. Pretty much anything you'd expect on an off-roader you can do to an FJ Cruiser.
Yeah. You know, they're not quite as... I like to say the Wrangler is kind of the Harley of the automotive world. You can really make it your own, right? There's such a huge aftermarket for it. Huge! Seriously, it's big. Aftermarket for it. But with the FJ, it's a little bit smaller, so you don't quite have the choice of front bumpers, rear bumpers, right? When I see them modded, they all kind of always look the same to me, whereas when I see a Jeep that's modded, it looks very different.
The interesting thing about the FJ...
You don't agree, though. Is that like, I don't agree look?
Well, I just think there's a really big off-road community around them. I think there's... If you start diving into it, there are tons of options for parts.
But like I say, when I see a modded FJ, it looks very similar to all the other modded FJs. Right? Wranglers, when you see them, they're crazy different. Because you can go really crazy with a Wrangler, right? People not only just mod them, but people will cut them and, you know, put 44s on them. This is not something that's happening with an FJ.
I mean, yeah, there's certainly less.
Right, they
of
cut
that.
Them, they stretch them, or they get the stretch version, right? I mean, there's just, you know, they tear the whole body off of them, so you have like naked Wranglers. I mean, there's just this whole world of different Wranglers.
The FJ Cruiser, though, if you want to go into the off-road community, there's a lot that you can do to them. I don't want to make it sound like they're all looking.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone to the FJ Summit now, both of us, and when you go there, there's certainly a variety of different ones.
Yeah, huge numbers of just stuff that you can do to them. Now, the FJ Cruiser, let's talk about the 4Runner.
Sure.
Because
that's got more mods.
The 4Runner, I think, might have more mods because they build more of them. They built 220-some thousand, like you said, FJ Cruisers, which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot.
But nothing compared to the 4Runner.
Yeah, nothing compared to the 4Runner or the Wrangler.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, you know, if you're looking at like a 2014 FJ Cruiser, you, price-wise, you could get into a 4Runner SR5, brand new, you know, with the warranty.
Yeah.
So which one would you rather have? Would you do the 4Runner or the FJ?
Well, it depends, you know. I mean, the 4Runner, your neighbor's going to have. The FJ, not so much.
Why? What? Which one would you do? I'm asking.
FJ.
FJ.
Yeah, I love the 4Runner. You know, well, So Toyota, of course, used to have that 4-liter in everything, including the Tacoma, and then they went and they put the 3.5-liter V6 into the Tacoma. And I got to tell you, I'm just not a huge fan of that engine. It's not very much more fuel efficient, right? That was a rationale. And by the way, the reason they discontinued the FJ, well, officially the reason, it may have been because they were only selling 13 to 14,000 a year, but was because of CAFE standards, right? It's not a very fuel efficient vehicle. And so to get away from that, they put a 3.5 liter into the Tacoma, which isn't much more fuel efficient, and certainly isn't as smooth or as, at least in my book, as coveted as that 4-liter. So,
but you can still get the 4-liter in the Forerunner.
Yes.
So
with that 5-speed manual, which is crazy because now our Silverado has a 10-speed, which is absolutely crazy.
So you would get the used FJ Cruiser over the new 4-liner?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love the 4-liner. Don't get me wrong. When I did a couple of years ago, I had the pleasure to go from Moab all the way to Telluride. Basically, not for the FJ Summit, but I was there for the FJ Summit, and we did off-road, and we got to drive all of the off-roady Toyotas, and that includes the Tundra, the Tacoma, the Land Cruiser, the 4Runner, and the, I forget one, or the Tacoma, did I say that already? Not the FJ, it wasn't around.
I don't think they had the Land Cruiser, did they?
Yeah, they had the Land Cruiser.
Did they? Wow.
Yeah, it was, well, they had the Land Cruiser because it was with... Overland.
Oh yeah, but that was Kurt's built out.
Right. Yeah.
200
yeah. But it was there.
Yeah. You. I mean, you weren't driving it.
No. Yeah. But I've driven it.
Right.
I know what it's like. We actually owned one.
Yes.
So anyway, out of all those, my favorite by far was the 4Runner. It just felt the most.
But you would still get the FJ over.
Yeah, because it's cool. That's why it's such a. That's
I mean,
why
it's cool,
such a premium.
But you're missing a lot of like the.
You're
stuff.
Missing yeah the back seat
and the trunk
and the trunk
and the rear window that goes down.
Yeah.
You know, and a little bit of the towing capacity. And a new vehicle with a warranty.
Yeah, I think it tows, what, the FJ tows 4,700?
I think 400 is like 5. It's a little bit.
It's a little bit more, yeah, but it's not much more.
I mean, the good news about both of them is they're going to be pretty dead reliable. So I drove the FJ Cruiser off-road for the first time yesterday.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
Well, the ride was really good.
Yeah, better than a Wrangler, I'd say.
Better than a Wrangler, better than a 4Runner off-road.
Yeah.
It doesn't drive as good on-road as a 4Runner, though, because of the soft ride, it's like a little bit wallowy.
Yep.
But when you get it off-road, I think it's better. It was a good experience. It's just very hard to see out of.
Especially out the back.
Yeah, but even out the front, like it's not so bad on the road. But when you're approaching like a rock, you just have no idea when you're going to hit it with the front tires.
It does have a little rear view camera built into the Arzas, into the rear view mirror, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
was that useful?
Not really.
So we did a video yesterday, and we took the FJ up Webster Pass, and it's getting very late in the year here. It's, of course, November. And it got a little terrifying toward the top because we're on a shelf road that's snow-covered. And shelf roads are terrifying enough because basically what you're doing is you're on a road that's got like a 1,000 or 2,000-foot fall to one side. And when you're doing that in snow, especially drifts of snow, then, you know, the chance of you rolling off the mountain are increased exponentially. And so in a way, it was very eye-opening to take the vehicle up there. In another way, it was very terrifying.
Right. I mean, it was with all that snow.
Might be our last time off-roading this year in Colorado.
At least up there,
up
for
there,
sure.
Up in the high country. That's like
high.
We were at like 12,000 feet above sea level.
But I think the seats are pretty good in the FJ.
Like, I'd say they're like pretty basic.
Yeah, they're pretty basic.
They're not adjustable electrically, right? They're all manual.
I thought four-wheel drive was really easy to engage. So you still have a manual lever, but it's super easy to get it into.
How about low range?
Four high and four low.
Yeah.
Really easy to get it in. I tried using the rear locker once, but I typically just use A-Track. And A-Track is a really cool system because it appropriates power to the wheels with traction via basically, you know, brake lock differentials. So it squeezes down on the wheels that are spinning. And it works great. It really does work well. I would say for the vast majority of stuff you'll bring that thing through, you don't need the rear locker. As long as you have the A-Track button, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, and when we bought it, the guy who actually had it put on some really good off-road tires. Which ones are on there now? Do you remember? We go through so many.
I think they're Cooper Discoverers, the all-terrains.
Are they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they're certainly off-road worthy. I don't think they're snow rated because we were in the snow, but you know they've got big lugs and they're beefy and they certainly have sidewall protection, so they have all the things I want on a tire when I go off road. And it was cool to have those on there, and that's why we were able to take it off road.
Right, yeah, it was great. You know, the trunk is pretty big. Ours has a power outlet back there,
yeah.
So you can put a decent amount
of
stuff.
Subwoofer.
and the subwoofer. You can put a decent amount of stuff into the rear storage area.
And you know what my favorite thing about that one is?
What?
Now that I've lived through a world of all like iPad controls, that radio is so easy to use.
Yeah, very simple.
It's got two dials, one for volume, one for tuning. And then it's got the buttons in the bottom. If you want to preset your favorite stations, all you do is push and hold, and it saves it. How easy is that? Compare that to the i3 that we have. Oh, my God.
It really would be nice to have a full panoramic sunroof.
I don't know if that was an option.
I don't think it was ever an option.
I don't think it ever was an option.
But it would be great to have a glass roof because it's a little cave-like in there.
You're just stuck on it being like, you know.
Well, I
think it's actually kind of cool. I kind of like that low rider.
I really
it's
like,
almost hot roddy, right? I mean, the first thing that hot rodders did was they chopped and channeled, you know, their vehicles, right? Which meant that they took off like 2 inches from the roof so that the roof came down because that gives you that kind of really cool, like, you know, the flat bill look. You're kind of
that.
You know.
It's great, but hot rodders don't drive 4 hours on the freeway. I really like the FJ Cruiser, but after coming home, so we drove it about 5 hours.
That's what makes it cool.
After driving it about 6 hours yesterday, yeah. I was like, yeah, I would like to see a little bit more of what's going on outside.
Oh, I didn't think that.
It's just a little bit like, you know what it's like? It's like a Camaro, where you're just really in it, but you don't feel like you're that connected to the outside. So that's the biggest complaint I have.
I always look at a vehicle whether I could do like a road trip in it, right? And I could certainly road trip that thing. I think it'd be very comfortable on the highway. It's got a good ride. The brakes are, you know, confidence inspiring. The steering's a little loosey goosey. It could be because ours is almost 60,000. I don't know if it came from the factory that way. But it's a comfortable car. You know, it's comfortable. There is two issues that would get me a little, you know, would keep me from giving it high marks or the top marks. You know what those are?
Fuel economy.
That's one. There's one more. You can't see this on, if you're listening to this, but if you're watching this, you can see what I'm doing.
Yeah, there's nowhere to put your arm.
Well, there is a place to put your arm. It's just completely hard plastic.
Well, yeah, your right arm's got a nice little squishy thing. Your left arm's just sitting on this, like, really hard plastic windowsill. Or below that, you've got the little shelf for your arm, but it's also that same hard plastic. So they didn't put any padding there.
Yeah, I don't know if that was cost-cutting or if that was just Toyota's way of you know, keeping it cool.
Right.
I'm not sure. I also like the it's got some other quirks. So let's talk about all the kind of quirks of the car, right? We've touched upon a number of them. So we talked about the three little binnacles. How about the lights? How do those work? Because they work differently than most cars.
Yeah, so there's off. There's daytime running lights. There's daytime running lights on with the markers. And then there's full lights on with the markers. So I don't know why they've got that weird middle position where you have the daytime running lights on with the taillights on. I have no idea what that is used for. Why didn't they put automatic headlights in it? That's an interesting thing.
It may have been, you know, now they're almost ubiquitous, but back then maybe not. It also has
2014? That wasn't that long ago, Dad.
No,
that
but
was
it,
6 years
but
ago.
But it was designed in 20.
But they
2003.
They facelifted it in, what, 2010? Because they got those new taillights and the new...
Yeah, there's a little bit... So if you want to know the difference between the newer ones and the newer ones have red taillights versus white taillights, or is it the other way around?
So the old ones had plain red taillights.
And the new ones have white.
And the new ones have like little white rings in them.
Yeah, so that's not much of a facelift.
Right. I think they changed probably the radio a little bit. Because I was looking at the 09s and 10s, and they had a different head.
Yeah, it's got this also old school way of, like, if you want to hook up Bluetooth, which you can,
right.
You got to do it through voice command, which
yep.
is weird.
Yep.
So you push the button, then it says, "How may I help you?" And you got to be like, "Connect Bluetooth."
Yeah.
Connecting Bluetooth.
It's a long process. So that's a little weird. What else is weird about it?
So, like, if you had the TRD exhaust, the exhaust came out behind to the side, right, behind the rear wheel. And if you don't have the TRD exhaust, it comes out straight back, compromising your approach angle, which is a little weird. So, you know, some of them have the exhaust poking backwards and some of them have it poking sideways.
Which is kind of funny. You think they'd all just want to poke them out the side. Do you think our exhaust is original?
Yeah, I think it's original.
I'm not super sure it is.
No, it's original. Why would you replace the exhaust?
Well, because I thought that's what one of the things James said. He looked at it and he's like, that exhaust is going to get caught up on stuff.
Yeah, but I think that's the way it was. I think the TRD came out the side. If you know, let us know in the comments below if we got that wrong.
Because we've got a big chrome tip on ours.
Yeah, but so the TRD also had a big chrome tip. It's a TRD.
But that one came out the side. I've no doubt the TRD. So here's like another 2014, and it's got a little pipe that just kind of plops out underneath the rear bumper.
Anyway, ours has a big chromey pipe, which looks cool.
There's a 2014.
Yeah, I see it.
So I'm wondering what the deal is with the exhaust. Maybe someone just put the tip on it. Maybe it's got like an aftermarket tip.
So that's also quirky about it. Of course, the three wipers are perhaps the most quirky thing. Now, the other quirky thing is, and once you get to see this, you'll never unsee it. It's got a really unique light signature because, Tommy?
Because of the little marker lights on the mirrors, which look like they should be spotlights.
But they're not.
No, they just kind of very dimly illuminate when you drive down the road.
But apparently you can buy, like, for $12, you can buy little LEDs and you can put in there and make them much brighter.
But then you'll blind people with your mirror lights.
I don't think they're that blind. I mean, those things, if you look at the pattern on the outside, they're not clear. They're like, got little, like, ridges and, you know, inside of them. So I think they're never meant to be, like, lights that light anything up. They're just marker lights.
I do like the spare tire on the back.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's got this weird spare tire cover.
Yep, it's got a hard shell spare tire cover. Well, it's half hard shell.
And we were looking at ours, and it had some Bridgestones, but they were like all seasons. They weren't like, you know, they weren't anything off-roady.
Yeah, for sure. And then you can actually, if you don't want to open up the whole rear swing gate, you can put the key in, hold it to the right, and then just pop up the glass. So you can just open up the glass.
I always forget about that.
Stuff into the,
like in some vehicles, you can turn it one way, and the windshield comes down, right? This one pops open. But that's something I always forget about, so I always open up the entire tailgate. The other thing you got to look out for on these is frame rust. Ours has just a little bit, but we looked at a whole bunch of them.
We talked about it at the beginning.
Yeah, there were so many. If you're buying one, there were so many that had rusty frames for some reason.
In the back, I like how everything is all rubberized and plasticized, so yeah. It's all covered in plastic and rubber.
And we have, I think, 400, is it, watt outlet back there?
Yep, 400 watt outlets.
Yeah, which is an option.
Yep, and I also like the floors are also covered in this rubberized material.
Oh, and that was the other thing. In the later years, we have controls on our steering wheel. The earlier ones didn't have the steering wheel controls.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I believe. So we have like audio, you know, volume and such.
So apart from that, other weird things, I can't see out of the blind spots. That's not great.
No, the other weird thing is a glove box.
Yes, it's got this massive slab of plastic in front of the passenger, and then the glove box is actually this little thing that lives underneath the dash.
Yeah, so there's a little tiny like glove box that's hidden, you know, where your knees would go, and then there's this other glove box that's in front of the driver.
Oh yeah,
on
the
top,
little one,
little cubby hole, which is weird. It kind of matches the cutout for the airbag on the passenger side, but there's like a little cubby in front of the driver where you could put stuff into.
There's also no closed center console, so what they do is they give each seat individual armrests, and then there's just a big kind of like bin in between the driver and the passenger.
Yeah, and it's okay in cup holders, so there are two cup holders, and I think you could put cups in the doors too.
Yep, and then you also have this big shifter, so it looks like a, I don't know, it's hard to kind of explain what it looks like, but it's this big kind of round.
It's very industrial looking. It's like a big, it's like almost like a pipe that somebody turned into a shifter. And that's some of the ones that I was looking at before we bought ours had almost that whole thing was made of billet steel. I'd love to get that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It looked really
like an
cool. It looked exactly like the one we have, which is plastic. And by the way, that little plastic chrome top cap was an option, believe it or not.
I like the white gauges, too. I think the white gauges are neat, and they illuminate white at night, so it tells you RPMs, speed, engine temperature, and voltage. So good gauges. But yeah, as far as I know, there's no MPG gauge. So there's a trip computer.
Which is weird.
But there's no way to tell you what your current MPG is.
Yeah, because
MPG
it's so
is.
Miserable. What is the MPG? What was it official
list? I think it's like 17 combined.
Yeah.
It was I think it's good. Worse.
Maybe like 19, 20 on the highway and
yeah,
like 15 in the city.
That sounds right. I think, yeah, in the city you're going to do a little bit worse.
So what's the horsepower?
It's about 260 horsepower,
yeah,
about 271 pound-feet of torque. So,
which is plenty for that vehicle. I never felt like it doesn't – and you know what? I was driving down the highway thinking to myself, you know, our support vehicle – and if you want to watch this video, it'll be up either on off-road or car at some point soon, as soon as we get done editing it. But our support vehicle for that was the Silverado. And, you know, that has a 10-speed automatic transmission. And when you're, like, going down the highway and you get to a big hill, which we have a lot of, right, you'll floor it and it'll, like, go from 10 to 8 to 6, right? It'll just do-do-do-do-do. The FJ really can't do that, right? It doesn't have all those gears. So it'll go, like, from 5 to 3.
Right.
But it seems to be okay. It's not like, you know, it's not like it's hurting for gears, which is funny because now with these, you know, massive transmissions – you think a 5-speed would be pretty archaic.
It does okay. I mean, yeah, it's got good power.
And so good sound. It also has this weird thing, like all of those 4 liters, when you start it up, there's a huge fan, and it sounds like you're starting up a jet engine.
Yeah.
It goes...
I don't think it's direct injected, though. I think it's just like a port-injected engine.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, around for a long time, so it's going to be dead reliable. One great thing about these is, and you'll see relatively, commonly on either Craigslist or Facebook or at dealers, wherever you're looking for these things, that they'll have not just 200, but there'll be ones with 300,000 on them, which is incredible for a vehicle that, you know, was just around for 7 years starting in 2014.
Do you like the fake hood scoop?
No, I hate the fake hood scoop, but the Forerunner has it. Toyota loves fake hood scoop, so I just think it's a Toyota thing. We talked to Mike Swears, the engineer for the Tundra and Tacoma, I think, at one point, and I went like, hey, dude, what's up with the fake hood scoops? And this is his thing, so, you know, take this for what it's worth, guys. I'm not saying this is set in stone, but the reason they don't make it functional is because for Toyota, reliability is one of the cornerstones of any vehicle they build, and they have a very specific set of engine ambience that has to be maintained in the engine compartment for that engine to have that long life. And so what he was saying is, if you put a hood scoop on it, what ends up happening is that, say, the parameters that you want that engine compartment to be at are from, I don't know the numbers, so I'm not going to make numbers up, but let's say you have a scale of 1 to 10, right? 1 being cold, 10 being hot. Mm-hmm. And you want that engine to be between like 4 and 6. The second you put a hood scoop on it, you could get that engine down to maybe 2 because you're allowing a lot more cold air in. And he said because of that, they don't make their hood scoops functional. I don't know if that's marketing, PR. I'll let you guys, comment on it yourselves, but that's what Toyota says.
Well, guys, let us know what you think of the FJ Cruiser in the comment section below.
Yeah, let us know if you think it's worth as much money as people are paying for it. Part of me thinks it's a modern collectible, a modern classic, so, the market reflects the demand for the thing. And part of me thinks it's in a bubble. What do you think, Tommy?
I think it's I don't think it's in a bubble. I just think people really love them. And I understand why people really love them. They're unique. They're special. They make you feel special driving them. And it's definitely a heart over brain thing. So, the brain says, I'll go buy a 4Runner.
So,
but the heart says FJ Cruiser, and I think that's what's going to keep them valuable.
So a couple things before we wrap this up. I need an answer from you guys. I'm of two minds on this question. Should we take ours and mod it? Because part of me thinks if it's a modern convertible, a modern classic, it's not a convertible. Wouldn't it be cool if it was?
Yeah, it would be cool.
It would be cool like a Jeep. Anyway, I'm not sure if we want to mod it, I asked that question in the video we did with James. That's up on TFL Off-Road if you want to actually see it and see a complete walk around of ours. And then I asked the viewers, should we mod it? And almost everybody said, yes, mod it. Do a full build out. In fact, if you look at your email today, some guy sent us an email where he's going to do $60,000 worth. Worth of mods to his. He's got a whole spreadsheet of everything he's going to do to it. But for me, the second you mod something is you make it your own. And then it becomes much less valuable because you just took something that everybody wants and made it into something that you want. And then the trick when you go to sell it, and keep in mind, we don't keep these forever. We, use them for a video series. We think about them like movie stars in a video. Once they're done, we pass them on to you guys. Is that you're making a vehicle that you guys might want into a vehicle that I want, and then you may not want the vehicle I want.
Yeah, I think we leave it stock.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it's I think you're going to take a lot of the...
That's why I bought that original... roof rack.
Well, that's too stock.
What do you mean that's too stock?
I think you could have done an aftermarket roof rack, but I mean, keep the suspension stock, keep the bumper stock.
What do you mean that's too stock? That's original. That's the way,
Yes, but that was like the one part of them that I mean, personally, I think the original roof rack was such a dopey looking thing. It's this roundy, roly-poly thing.
It's part of the design of it.
And for some reason, they only put the basket on the back half of the roof rack and not the front half.
I never understood that. It's like a baker creates this wonderful cake and on top they stick, let's say a cherry and you're like, I hate the cherry. I don't want the cherry.
But ours never had it originally. Ours didn't
right, but they,
with
but
it.
They, you could buy it with them. So to me, originality is always more sought after than...
Well, then leave it be. It's original without the roof rack.
No, that came with it. You could buy one with it.
Oh, my goodness.
If I were a collector, then I'd want all the bits and pieces that you could get from Toyota for it. And none of the bits and pieces that you can't. The other question I have is, since they're still building them, right, and selling them, do you think 25 years from now when those are able to be imported, do you think people will import them? Or maybe not even 25 years, right? It's less than that now. Right? Because after 25 years, you can import vehicles from other countries legally.
No, I don't think people will import them.
No?
Because you can buy them here. I mean, typically, like, the vehicles you see imported, for the most part, are like R34 GTIs right, but think and R32
about, think
GTIs.
About the market, right? Right now, one is almost worth the same as a new one if you get the 2014. So 25 years from now, they're going to be through the roof, right? And the ones from South Africa where they're abundant and still being made, or the Middle East, right, are going to be much cheaper, and they're going to be identical to the ones that are here.
But the South African ones are right-hand drive.
Are they?
Which is a problem.
How about Middle East?
Middle East, I don't know what they're in the Middle East.
Yeah, I think they're not. I think they're left-hand.
I don't think they're classics yet.
And Japan, of course, is right-hand
drive. Right-hand drive, yeah. I don't think they're at classic status yet.
People think the trail teams are.
But I think they're collectible, but I don't think they're classics. And I think they're still. I think we've got a little bit of depreciation to go before people. I mean, 7 years old, there's very few cars in the world that appreciate at 7 years old. Like BMW 1M appreciated.
Like the exotics do. Okay, I can tell you the ones that appreciated. The Demon appreciated.
Right, but they built how many? 3,500?
3,000.
3,000.
The Ford GT appreciated.
They built.
They're still building them. There's no number.
I think they capped them. They're like, we're only going to build
They capped them and then they said they're going to build more.
All right.
So they're still building them. What else was like that? These are very limited run numbers, right? You're not in the 220,000 range.
Right.
But. Once again, the sought-after ones are going to be the last year of production, I think, or the last, those, right? If you're a collector and you want one, at least I'm putting myself in those shoes because that's why we bought the last year. Do you want the low-mileage 2014 or do you want the high-mileage 2007?
Well, as a collector, sure, but I still think that they built 13,000 or whatever it was in 2014.
And let's face it, the original FJs are very collectible now.
Yeah, but those are, 60 years old.
Yeah, and actually the FJ Cruiser can be more valuable than the original FJ. Because you can get an original FJ anywhere from, if it's pretty ratty, right, and it needs everything, like 15K, all the way up to like a pristine model is 40K. And a trails team is going to cost you 45. So it's actually more expensive for the FJ than the original.
Although, to play devil's advocate, the ones at Mecum were selling for like 70.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about the ones, I'm not talking about the Icon ones. Those are 200K, right? I'm talking about like...
Yeah, I think that...
Like the ones you see that are, for sale.
I have no doubt that in 40 years, the FJ Cruiser is going to be very valuable. But I still think we have another 15 years of depreciation. It's just not old enough. I mean, I think 6 years old. And if Toyota brings back another one, which they are rumored to do...
There's a rumor that there might be an electric one coming.
Then I think that could either...
I wouldn't hold my breath on that.
Yeah, but if that happens, it might decrease the value of the first ones. Or who knows, maybe it'll increase.
And actually, I think the fact that the 4Runner is still being made makes it even more valuable, right? Because everybody's like... Hey, I can get a new 4Runner, but the one I really want is the Forbidden Fruit, which is the FJ.
Well, we'll see. Let us know what you think in the comments below.
And guys, thank you for spending another, half hour, 45 minutes with us.
Yep.
We really enjoy these conversations. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you've got us to see. We'd love to see your comments because we read them. And if you're listening to it as part of our podcast, thank you for, joining us this week for the FJ/4Runner special. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Ciao.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.